You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Dr. Aaron Carr Jordan, an Arizona professor who specializes in adolescent and child development, who's been banned from 8 McDonald's near where she lives. Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can I call you Aaron, or would you prefer Dr. Carr Jordan?
Aaron is just fine.
Okay. Aaron, I saw an article online. Actually, it was in June 9th of 2011, in the Arizona Republic. Chandler mom, disgusted by fast food play areas, starts crusade. Now, I want to talk about that in a little bit, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, could you tell them who is Dr. Aaron Carr Jordan and what do you do for a living?
Well, first and foremost, I am a mom. I have four children, ages 2, 4, 6, and 8. I'm a proud mom at that. I enjoy children and working with children so much that I decided to make it my profession. And I went into psychology, but I decided to specialize in children and how they grow and they learn and they develop. And so I went to school, got a PhD in educational psychology, and I specialize in child and adolescent development. I am currently a professor at multiple universities where I teach various courses, including child and adolescent development, child psychology, motivation, learning, learning in the brain, and things like that. I love what I do, and I love being a mom. And it was sort of being in that role that led me to this campaign that I'm on to improve children's health across the country and across the globe, for that matter.
Cool. This article that I mentioned from June 9, 2011, Chandler Mom Disgusted by Fast Food Play Area Starts Crusade in the Arizona Republic, which I guess is probably the biggest daily out there, and
correct,
I guess all over Arizona, right? Especially Phoenix and Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
Area. That article, although it did explain what we're about to talk about, that mm-hmm. really didn't generate a lot of attention, I guess, until the New York Times did a story in September, actually September 17th of this year, A Mother's War on Germs at Fast Food Playlands. And after that article came out, more attention was paid. Was that when you were banned from going into these particular McDonald's in your area?
It wasn't the Times article that was the impetus for the ban, although that location that I was banned from was the location that I was with the New York Times people at. So there was a connection there, but the reason that I was banned was not because of the Times article coming out. I was banned because the health department visited that particular location after I filed a formal complaint, and they were cited for two violations. At the same time, the Anderson Cooper show aired. I was actually on vacation during that time, and when I came home, it was when I had the knock at my door from somebody serving me with a notice of prohibition to enter.
Right.
There was a lot of very positive attention generated from the Times article, and I did a lot more national interviews following that article coming out.
Right.
But the impetus for the ban itself was an incident that occurred at the location after I got their test results. I found out that there was Staphylococcus aureus and Bacillus cereus at high levels in the location, so I drove across town to let the manager know so that they would shut it down. I had every reason to believe that if I told them there was a problem in their playland, that they would just shut it down and clean it and make sure it was nice and safe before the kiddos were allowed to go back in and play. And unfortunately, that just wasn't the case. In fact, they did absolutely nothing, even though I wrote down on a piece of paper my name, my credentials, my phone number, and exactly what the lab report indicated, and told them what the potential risks were to children. They still did nothing. And so when I came back to see whether they had fixed the problem after I had already told them, I came back a few days later. Actually, it was the following day, and there was a little boy in there with a developmental disability who was licking his hands and licking the wall and was about to actually lick the wall. When I say the wall, I mean the wall of the indoor right. play structure, so the tubes and tunnels. And so I, no, Barry, and said, you know, please don't do that. And I took him down the slide and told his parents that it might be a good idea if he washed his hands or sanitized them before he ate, just to be on the safe side. And I said, I'm a researcher. I'm conducting a national study. I was in here a few weeks ago. These are the results. I just got them back last evening. And it would be a good idea just to take some precautionary measures. I went back to that manager and I said, I was in here yesterday. I told you exactly what I found. I told you what the results said. I told you that this place poses a significant safety risk to children. There should be no children playing in there until you have somebody come in and professionally clean it. You have to disinfect it. It's not just, hey, go wipe it down with soap and water. We're talking about stuff that's opportunistic, causes major illness and infection. These are on the CDC red flag list. This isn't just a little bit of germs. These are opportunistic pathogens. And it should have been taken far more seriously, and it just was not. It was unconscionable that they did nothing.
Right. Of course, I want to get into the, because that was one of the notes I took, actually opportunistic pathogens. I want to talk in detail about that. But when you went to these parents, parents who were obviously not paying close enough attention to their disabled child, when you went over to them with the child and gave them your recommendations, what was their response?
They were appreciative. They were very nice and just said, oh, okay, thank you. I wouldn't say that they weren't paying attention. These places are not places where you can see your kids. They're like little hamster places. You know, imagine that there's the hamster goes up and there's turns and twists and ups and downs. And I just happen to be a very small woman. I'm small in stature and I don't weigh very much. So for me, it's easier to get in there. And
oh, you were in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you were actually inside. Were you working in there? Are you gathering samples?
I was in there doing follow-up testing. Yeah, I was in there swabbing.
Okay. I understand. I got the impression that you were outside of the contraption.
No. We were on the second story inside the tube.
Okay.
So there's no way that they could have seen him or what he was doing, which was all the reason why I went down the slide with him and took him over.
Well,
but every single parent who sees me, if they ask me a question, my answer is always the same. I'm a researcher. I'm doing a national study. I'm just trying to make sure that these are clean and safe. If kids ask me the question, I always say, you know, I'm just trying to make sure these are nice and clean for you guys. I never say, hey, don't be in here. This place is evil. Or, you know, this is bad. Stay away.
Not yet.
I never say that.
Right. Not yet.
I would say now, as a parent, I would not allow my children to go in any of these, except there's one chain that does a great job, and my kids are allowed to go there, and we do go there, actually.
I actually heard you talking about that on one of the videos, that was very clean. What was that, Chick-fil-A? Was that it?
Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. They have a very good protocol. Most of them have an outside cleaning company that comes in. They do sanitizing nightly. They check it 3 times a day for anything like debris or accidents that have occurred. And then they do the sanitizing nightly. And then they have somebody that comes in and disinfects biweekly with steam. So they're doing it right. And they also have sanitizers that they hand out to parents. And they have the thing on the wall when you go in that are individually wrapped. And they take it very seriously. And for them, it seems to be a big deal to worry about children's health. And they seem to get that correlation of, if you have one of these, your intention is to increase revenue by having one of these in your establishment, that then you hold a particular responsibility to keeping them clean and safe.
Yeah, that would make sense. That's an interesting company because they actually, at least here by me on the East Coast, they're not open on Sundays.
They're not open here on Sundays either. It's a corporate-wide policy.
Very nice. Then what happened was, I'm not going to make you go through what you go through all the time explaining how it was. I'll tell the listeners, one of your kids wanted to run in and use the bathroom, and you went in with them, and then they wanted to play in the play area, and that's how this whole thing started, right?
Correct.
I was thinking, when you were mentioning how you approach these parents, the boilerplate language you give them, I think it's going to come to a point where you're not going to have to do that. Everybody's going to recognize you.
Yeah, a lot of people do now, and I get the fist bump or the high five, or somebody says, are you that mom? And I would say 98% positive. And I think that's just wonderful. I mean, I know that sounds sort of cheesy and a little bit corny, but I think it's great. Parents have been incredibly responsive and supportive. And I joke that I have aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and moms and dads and grandparents from all over the world who weren't aware, myself included. I did not know that these places were not cleaned and maintained regularly and that the health department didn't inspect them. I did not know. And I thought that if you had a complaint or a problem, and I thought naively so, that if you told the manager, they would just fix it. And unfortunately, I have learned over and over and over again that that's just not the case. And it's not just one state or two states. It seems to be all of the states. And since there's no regulation at any state or federal level, and that means that then there is no incentive for them to do so, unless it's a personal moral incentive, that it just seems to be something that's not a priority and they're not doing. The parents have been warm. And now that there's awareness that's been generated, they're not going to take it anymore. They're not going to spend their money in an establishment that doesn't care about their children. You can't purport yourself to be pro-children and pro-children's health and then do the antithesis or the exact opposite and not take care of your playland and leave it in a state where kids are going in and they're playing, literally crawling in human feces and crawling by pictures of obscenity and sperm and penis and F you and F that and mold that's growing so thick that you can't see the difference between where the divot is and where the platform is. In one case, they were fully aware that there was a very large gash in their second story platform. And rather than have it fixed, which is what manufacturers' guidelines say that they have to do, they covered it up with a bar mat. And this was a greater than 12-inch teed gash. And it was in a place specifically designed for children to be standing. I have a huge problem at this point with them purporting themselves to be, in many cases, very much about children's health and caring about children, but then just not doing anything at all to back up that statement.
Right. And I guess the science is going to show everything. I'm sure it will. But I was thinking that you were saying 98% positive reaction. I'm curious about the 2%.
There's always 2%. It doesn't matter what the issue is. There's going to be 2% who finds something negative to say.
Right, but I mean, what could they say? No, I like climbing in feces. I like rolling around in feces.
I actually got survival of the fittest. How about the little boy who was licking the wall? Just lick the wall and get whatever he's supposed to get.
Right, I heard that. Yeah, I know.
In all honesty, if those types of people are the people commenting, I'm certainly not going to worry about their response. The vast majority of the people care very deeply about children and children's health and don't support anything that puts their kids or kids they know or any children in danger. So I got called a whack job once, but the person spelled whack wrong, so I wasn't too concerned about that either.
Where did they write it? On the inside of the play, inside of the play place? Or
so I'd be sure to read it. And then people give the basic, you know, you're supposed to be exposed to germs. It helps build your immune system, which is not true. You should be exposed to some things, but that's for asthmatic purposes. It's not for this, and that's not opportunistic pathogens. And what we're finding consistently are on the CDC's red flag list, the FDA bad bug list is what it's called. And the numbers are through the, I mean, numbers that every microbiologist with whom I've had a conversation see those numbers and says, oh my gosh, they're not supposed to be even close to that region. Tens and hundreds are indicative of the structure not being clean. And we're getting numbers in the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions and tens of millions.
I did take that as a note that you said the bacteria are growing at high levels.
Right, which means it's not being cleaned.
And I'm glad you brought this up because I wanted to ask you about that because I was wondering what kind of high levels. And then I was curious to ask if it's, and of course, I'm sure it's happened and it's happening right now as we speak, but is there a way to track a child's illness back to these obscene places? Not obscene places, but obscenely filthy places.
Filthy.
Yeah.
Right. Most of the data is anecdotal. In other words, it's coming from the mouths of parents or aunts and uncles and brothers and all of those people or teachers. And people are good at knowing where they've been and what's likely the cause of their child's illness. But I can say there are several times that children have visited pediatricians and said, this is where we were. This is likely where it's from. Additionally, visited hospitals and had that same conversation. I have been in contact with the presidents of a few children's hospitals. They support what I'm doing completely and affirm that it's a problem. There isn't a lot of data that says this child got this in this environment on this day.
Right.
That being said, now that parents are aware, again, that whole problem with the fact that before we just didn't know, and most people assume that they're safe, they don't assume that they're risky, and they assume that they're being clean. So when they hear their child has a bacterial infection, their first thought isn't, oh, they were playing McDonald's earlier today.
Right.
Hopefully now it is, because the likelihood that that's an incredibly likely source from where they're infected derived is incredibly possible. So I think that now that we're creating that awareness, additionally, as soon as I get a result back that indicates that there's a problem, either a maintenance problem, equipment that's failing or is in disrepair, or I get a lab report back that shows that there's really high numbers or that the pathogens that we found are opportunistic, I file a complaint with the health department in every state. So it doesn't matter what state or where. So at least that there's now a chain created.
Right.
So that if a child does get sick, they have some place to look and say, hey, this was reported on this day, and therefore it's likely that that child acquired it there.
Right.
So I'm hoping to create that sort of connection for parents so that they at least have some knowledge. And this hasn't been done in the past. A few researchers have studied playgrounds, but one or two locally, and then just said, hey, yeah, they're dirty. It certainly wasn't my intention to embark on a national study and to start a nonprofit and to turn this into a second full-time job. But it's that big of a problem. And more importantly, correcting the problem has the potential to make one of the most significant improvements in overall children's health in the nation in a very long time, because so many children play in there. 50 kids per day, per place. There's 15,000 places that have indoor play areas. That's 270 million children per year.
Wow. That's almost our entire population.
That is an enormous amount of children who are playing in these and are exposed, knowing what the conditions are. And I've been, just including yesterday, because I was out doing more testing yesterday, I've been now to 16 states, and I'm finding the same things over and over and over again, which means that it is a national problem, not an individual state or region problem.
Right. The awareness is very important, like you were saying, and I guess because there's no trail back to these playlands, because if something happened to the child, wild. You can imagine, let's say you walked through a parking lot in New York City or a big city, and then you went into the McDonald's and your kid played in the playland and the kid contracted something. I guess the parent's first reaction would be, well, we did walk through that parking lot. Instead of saying, well, God, we were in the playland, of
right?
course, because parents think of the playland as something positive and it's a kid's playland. And of course, there can't be anything wrong with it. Is that what you think is creating a lot of the...
Exactly. And every other environment in which children play or congregate, most of them are regulated. And most of them, if there's an illness or an outbreak, they tell the parents. And there's a way of letting parents know so that they can take precautionary measures. Think about it at your child's school. If one of the kids in his or her class gets pink eye, then they write on the board,
right,
we had an outbreak of pink eye, so that all the parents know. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
That way parents can say, oh, okay, this is what's going on with my child. Oh, Tommy had pink eye, so maybe it's possible that Sue has pink eye. So they can at least, when they go to their doctor, they have an arsenal from which to draw, if you will.
Right.
And that's true in daycares, in schools, in gyms, in most places where children frequent. That's the case. That's just not the case in these, even though they fit all of those other guidelines. And they're specifically designed for children to be playing in, and they're specifically designed for children in the age group that's considered at greatest risk in the population.
Right.
So that subset that's at highest risk. Because we're talking about toddlers, preschool age, and elementary school age children, typically 2 to 12, with the immune systems that are underdeveloped and certainly immunocompromised.
Right. And of course, they're specifically designed to generate more revenue, and they do.
Absolutely. In fact, some of the places that I've researched, revenue is generated more than $300,000-$400,000 in a year just by the addition of a playground. That is a significant difference in revenue. So to shell out a few hundred dollars a month to have them cleaned properly seems like a pretty fair trade-off and pretty uneven to not do.
Right.
At present, I think one of the biggest problems in all of this lies in the fact that the industry leader, the corporation that represents more than 20% of the industry, perhaps 25%, is still doing nothing. It hasn't made any corrective measures, has repeatedly said that we're taking it under advisement and we consider it a very serious problem and we're reviewing what we have in place.
Mickey D's?
Yes, this would be McDonald's. They are saying a lot and doing nothing. And the industry follows them. They are the leader. You would be hard-pressed to say fast food and not have somebody think McDonald's. For that matter, indoor playground, and
right,
you would think McDonald's. Because even the casual dining ones that have indoor playgrounds like Chuck E. Cheese and those types of places, they still follow what the procedures and things like that are, an industry standard. And standard is certainly set forth by McDonald's. And they have been complacent, and I believe their approach at this point is very problematic and is precipitating a greater problem.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny, not funny, but it's true that corporations and especially government have the great ability to create activists out of people, even though, of course, they don't want that, but they seem to have this ability to push people to the point where they just say, that's it, now I'm going to take
right.
it back to you.
Yeah, and people have said to me, why didn't you just tell the manager? And I shouldn't have used that voice. Because people ask it over and over again, and
right.
I did tell the manager.
Right.
I told many managers. I told managers over and over and over again. And then I told health departments, and then I told senators and representatives, and I have told everyone, and this is the reason why I often reach out to the media, because I think the media is the best tool to reach the most amount of people who are most impacted. In other words, parents and children. So
right.
the reason why I do so many interviews. And the reason why I talk to as many people as I possibly can is because it's just me. I have a partner who's a microbiologist who holds a PhD in microbiology, specializes in immunology. She is the one who reads the lab reports and says, this is this, 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 and this, and gives me that specific information. So I'm coming from that standpoint from an incredibly educated perspective. And then I have to use what she tells me and then what I know. And the only way to tell a lot of people is to use the media, because it doesn't work so well if I just stand out on my sidewalk and say, hey, guess what I found? Please don't take your kid in there. One of the reasons that we actually created the nonprofit was to have a place from where we could actually try to generate grants to help with the funding for the research, because I'm funding this at present out of my pocket. It is my money, nobody else's. I'm teaching extra shifts and extra classes and picking up work wherever I can to fund this, because I think it's that important. I think that making sure that not only the corporations are aware that it's a problem, but that I continue to show that it's a problem across the country, because the corporations, McDonald's in particular, likes to send out the it's an isolated incident message, and they did that for a very long time. But after I went to enough states and enough locations, they couldn't say it's an isolated incident anymore.
Right, right.
So they had to change their response.
Right.
So I keep trying to generate more information and gather more data and speak to as many knowledgeable people as I can so that there are no more rebuttals. They can't refute anything and they can just say, okay, now we're going to do something about it. And I'll continue to do what I'm doing until that happens. And thanks to people like you, I can keep doing it.
We're here to help. With peanut allergy, when that was ignored for many years until it couldn't be ignored, what really brought that to the fore, for at least the media, was when a teenager died from eating peanuts. Perhaps you might need something like that, something drastic and dramatic.
I'm not willing to wait for that. And I have had person after person tell me that it's going to take a kid dying, and I swear I'm not going to let it get to that because I think that is unacceptable. I think children are too valuable, and we shouldn't be approaching this from a retroactive standpoint. We should be doing it from a proactive one. And if we have the knowledge that warrants corrective measures now, then we should be taking those corrections to make sure that those types of things don't happen. There are more than one occasion where children have broken limbs, sustained traumatic brain injuries, have been caught by the neck on their hoodies, or have major cuts and abrasions. And I can tell you that at the level I'm seeing the equipment in disrepair right now, the rate of those types of injuries will only increase, which is why I press so hard for this to be addressed now with an amount of immediacy. I believe this to be an imminent health hazard, not sort of, you know, it's been going on for a while. I think this will only get worse. So I think that's one of the main reasons why I spend the money I do and why I take all the time that I do away from my children and why, fortunately, I happen to have a family who's very loving and supportive and agrees that this is such a big issue and why so many people have paid attention. I won't sit back and wait for something that tragic to occur.
Yeah, I was just referring to getting the public's attention, not you doing what you're doing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If you could save even one life, then spending your whole life doing this, I guess many people would think that would be worth it.
I've gotten thousands of emails, thousands, and that's not an over-exaggeration, from people who have seen the story or heard about it from a friend or something along those lines, whose child or grandchild, in many cases, contracted an illness or got an injury from one of these places, expressing their gratitude. I have children who are doing this project as their science projects. One just won a gold medal. I have elementary school classes writing me, telling me thank you and that they've shared it with their friends. So we are reaching a lot of people, and I'm very confident that we have made a difference and that children have been protected.
Yeah.
I don't think I could keep going if I don't think that that was happening.
That's what's keeping you going, then. You're getting those tons of emails that are saying, go, 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 so why would you stop?
Right. To stop right now, to me, would be equally as bad because nothing's really changed. I have two states that I drafted the bill. It's the Kids Play Safe bill. I drafted the bill, which basically, and this, it seems like such a short little jump, all it does is amend current health code to allow inspectors to look inside the playlands to make sure that they're not broken, that they're not filled with debris, and that they look like they're safe and they do the same swabbing that they would do in other parts of the restaurant. Basically, it just includes the playland in the area that they inspect, therefore giving them the ability to enforce procedures to clean it up, to say, hey, there's a problem here, now you have to fix it.
Give us a definition. I know, as you explained, you have a cohort of yours who has a background in this because you have a background more in, I guess, psychology, right?
Right.
So she does the lab work and everything, but can you give us a quick definition of opportunistic pathogen?
A human opportunistic pathogen is a pathogen. It's a type of bacteria that's able to cause illness or infection in a human. Our numbers are so high that we only, at this point, have the lab identifying those that are of significance to humans because there's so many things that are considered like normal flora that fluff off of your skin or you would expect to find in any type of environment such as this.
Right.
And we don't want to be overestimating our numbers by saying this is what we're finding and our numbers are like this. When I say that we're finding tens of millions, we're talking tens of millions of opportunistic pathogens. And if you were to add in all that other stuff that's considered normal flora, then the numbers would be through the roof.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you about, the opportunistic pathogens. Now, there's a lot of, I guess, Latin names that are listed on your website. Perhaps you can give the audience a little understanding, a couple of the big guys. Let me just get to that because that's on your website, which is kidsplaysafe.net, and it's under the results tab. And you have some photos there, and I see some common names keep popping up. Bacillus is something that I see a lot. I saw Staphylococcus. Who are the big offenders here?
So those two, Bacillus and Staphylococcus, are actually commonly found in the environment. However, the two species that we are consistently finding that are problems, that are opportunistic pathogens, are Staphylococcus aureus, which is potentially MRSA, which is something that most people are familiar with.
Why don't you explain what MRSA is?
MRSA is methicin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. What that means basically is that it is multi-drug resistant, so that if you get an infection with this Staph aureus, that it's going to be much harder to fight off. Now, remember, for a healthy adult, it's going to be hard to fight off. And if you're a child, it is a far more difficult process. So the Staph aureus we're finding quite frequently. Additionally, the Bacillus cereus. Bacillus cereus is another one that's multi-drug resistant. That's a common source of food. So if you get that, you're likely to have nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, high fevers. That can be potentially fatal, as can Staphylococcus aureus. We're finding coliforms in almost every location. That's indicative of fecal contamination. So in other words, kids are playing around in crap.
Great.
We're finding Escherichia coli, which is E. coli. People are familiar with that. And nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, again, can be potentially fatal. Acinetobacter baumannii, which is commonly referred to as Iraqibacter. That's what our troops are coming home with from Iraq. Again, multi-drug resistant. We're finding bacteria that cause everything from meningitis, sepsis, endocarditis, skin infections, ear infections, eye infections, abscesses under the skin, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, fevers, and all of this, and I'm not even testing for viruses. So imagine what would be present if we included that. The bottom line is these conditions are not safe.
Yeah. You used the word species before.
When we talk about bacterium, they come in a certain genus, which is Staphylococcus, Streptococcus, Bacillus. That would be considered the genus. And then within that genus is a species, so the specific type that you're talking about. So several types are not a problem. They're part of normal flora, which means that they're found commonly, while others are less common and pose a more significant risk. And those species are the ones that are specifically identified by the website. And those are the ones that we look for when we're testing, because those are the ones that are relevant, and those are the ones that parents need to be aware of. And those are the ones that cause a problem. And so if I'm talking to people who have a medical background or who have a micro background, I can say this is what we're finding. And they affirm, yes, those are dangerous. Those pose a risk.
It wouldn't be too far of a stretch to say that unequivocally that there have been many, many, many cases of kids picking something up in these playlands, obviously, because of the rate of growth of these bacteria. And also that there probably have been cases where kids have caught these very dangerous species and died. That we don't know about.
I'm not aware personally of any fatalities. That doesn't mean that they don't exist. I am aware of quite a few cases of very serious cases. As it relates to those, I can affirm that, yes, there have been. I don't want to personally overstate. I never do. So I don't want to say, yes, there are children who have died, because I don't have those facts.
Yeah.
But there are thousands and thousands of children who have gotten very, very ill and been hospitalized and treated, and children who have suffered injuries.
Another thing you said that I want to make sure the listeners hear is the term multi-drug resistant. What exactly does that mean?
Multi-drug resistant means that if you go to treat whatever type of infection that you have, you would, for instance, take like a penicillin or something, just to give an example. And if these are multi-drug resistant, that means that the typical antibiotic or the typical approach to address the infection doesn't work. It means that the bacteria has sort of adjusted, if you will, and has like a guard up and can't be impacted by that antibiotic.
Are any of these species that you're finding, are any of them able to outsmart the current drug stock?
I'm not sure. I know that there are several that are multi-drug resistant and that do respond to others. The problem is knowing which they respond to, which goes back to the awareness thing and why I inform health departments the way I do. And in some cases, I inform the CDC, so that if a child does go to the emergency room or does go to their pediatrician and they have an infection, if there's a chain created, then they can say, okay, this is likely to be Staph aureus or MRSA, and this is the approach that they'll take, knowing that two of the typical approaches, if they didn't know what the bacteria was, wouldn't work. So it saves time, because some of these are potentially fatal. And the more you know going in, the more likely you are to be able to get it before it becomes unrectifiable.
Right. It's only a matter of time, I think, when this thing catches on. I was thinking when we were talking about that disabled kid who was getting too close to the play place, that there's a chance that kids across the country might run into you in one of these things. Earlier we talked about how governments and corporations can make activists out of people. Have you ever done anything like this before?
No.
So in other words, you've never been compelled to do something like this, which I guess some people might consider to be a little over the top for them. Even though you're getting the support you are, these are the people who are actually talking to you. There's a number of people who aren't talking to you, obviously. And I'm sure there's some of them who go,
right,
oh God, this lady's just, why they would say that is ridiculous, but because you're helping them out. But the point is, there could be some people who might think that you're taking this a little too far.
You know, and I don't think it's been taken far enough. I don't think personally that as a parent, first of all, and as somebody who works with children and knows the potential impact of this, and getting the knowledge that I've gotten from my partner, Dr. Furr, I don't think that it's been taken far enough. Until there's something in place that ensures that children who play in these places are safe when they do so, then I don't think it's enough, period. And while I appreciate what other people have to say, and I certainly don't take anything away from their opinion, my opinion is just that there should be no stone left unturned when it comes to children and their safety. One child injured, one child hurt, one child ill unnecessarily, when there's something very easily that can be done to stop it, it's too many.
Can't argue with that. I want to look at this letter here that you received in October, at least it was dated October 21st of this year, 2011, from the McDonald's franchise, from James M. Stipe, and he says, this letter is intended to provide you reasonable notice of the prohibition on your entry pursuant to ARS, I guess that's Arizona Revised Statutes, 13-1502A1 enclosed, so they enclose that too. It is hoped that you will not attempt to enter any of the above restaurants. If you are represented by counsel and have any questions, please provide that person my letter. Please do not attempt to contact me directly. Thank you. Thank you for your anticipated cooperation. Very truly yours. And
yeah, of course, I didn't cooperate very much with that letter.
That's what I want to get to next. And also, he put in the letter, the Arizona Revised Statutes, the criminal code, criminal trespass and burglary. So he's threatening.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's saying that you probably, well, you will be violating, even though he's not in the law enforcement business. He's saying that you may be violating criminal trespass in the third degree. Now, that's as yet to be determined, right?
I haven't gone into any of the others on the list, nor do I intend to, for several reasons. One, it's quite obvious that that individual who owns all of those doesn't keep a safe playland. That was the one that had the Staphylococcus aureus and the Bacillus cereus and the myriad of other things that are harmful to children. I had been in another one prior to that. It had similar problems. So common knowledge would say that the other six are likely to be exactly the same. And there's parents all over Arizona now that are aware of those addresses, and they're watching those places like a hawk.
Right.
So I certainly don't need to be the one that's going in there. And in all honesty, I would say thank you to that gentleman very much, because he helped to elevate what I'm trying to do to a level that created far more awareness and informed far more parents than I was able to do by myself. So.
Right.
The letter was kind of like Christmas.
Yeah, I hear you. Have you contacted an attorney about any of this yet?
I did reach out to an attorney to get advice about what it meant, basically, because I don't presume to be that knowledgeable in the legal arena. So I did contact somebody and say, what does this mean and what doesn't it mean? And basically, it was just that, hey, don't go in there. And I said, hey, okay. And that really isn't a big deal to me. And I'm certainly not going to spend the money that I have on an attorney when I could be spending it on more lab tests.
I was curious about whether or not this interpretation by this, and I don't know what he is, this James M. Stipe, because it just says for the firm. So I don't know if he's the attorney for the firm. It doesn't really say here. However, I was wondering if you had asked the attorney, and if you hadn't, if you plan on asking an attorney, if in fact this Arizona Revised Statute that he included in the letter, this could actually be used to prosecute you.
Yes, it can. It's a private business, and they have every right to say that I cannot go in there, regardless of the reason, even though I was not disruptive, nor was I creating a problem. In fact, I think they were being incredibly disruptive by doing nothing. But yes, it absolutely can. If I go in there, they have every right to ask me not to be there. So I would be trespassing because it's their private property.
Do you have the name of the people who own the McDonald's?
Ernie Adair, the Adair Group. I wasn't aware of what his name was, and I had a few people send it to me.
Well, I have a feeling Ernie is going to get some fan mail.
Yeah.
When we talked about before how the talking heads on the show, and again, not all of them are. I appreciated one of them, and I mentioned that to you before. I thought she actually had some good questions, and usually they don't. Usually they're just actors and actresses and fixtures in front of the television. But the talking heads made sure they gave McDonald's their time, even though there were no McDonald's representatives on the show. It would have been nice if they had somebody from McDonald's there debating you. No, we want our play places filthy, of course. So they said, well, McDonald's did put out a letter about it, and here's the letter.
Right.
And none of those dummies asked you if, in fact, this was true. And what McDonald said was, they've been in consultation with Dr. Carr Jordan, but have they been in consultation with you?
I have conversations with the director of U.S. Ops, or public affairs. I was having them on a regular basis, which is why I said earlier in the interview that they say a lot. It's under review. We're reviewing our process. We thank you for the lab results and the pictures and everything that you send us, but then they do nothing with it.
Talk is cheap, right?
But yes. Well, it really is, because it doesn't amount to anything. In fact, the last I heard from what she told me is that what they had in place was working, which is laughable.
Maybe she's right, though. She said what they have in place is working. It's actually spreading germs. Maybe that's what you meant. They're very careful about what they elaborate upon.
Yes, it is worded quite carefully.
So go ahead. You were saying you were...
Yes, up until recently, I was having regular phone conversations with her. In fact, prior to getting the order prohibition to enter, I was invited by her and the Arizona District Operations Manager to go on a tour of that location that was so bad to show them exactly what it was that I'm seeing, to point out why it's such a problem.
Right.
The owner of the establishment must have had other ideas, because it was during that same time that I got the notice. And then they released a statement that I was saying that I was disruptive, which seems counterintuitive if they had invited me to come back that same weekend or that following beginning of the week to take them on a tour.
Right. Well, probably so. What happened was they took their own tour and they saw what you were talking about and they realized that they could never invite you in.
If it were just limited to that one, we would be fine. Unfortunately, that one had bacterial results that were just awful. There's others that are far worse. And it would have been a great learning tool for them to be able to actually go in and see what I see.
You had been in consultation with McDonald's, and then they just quickly cut it off. And I suspect that it was probably because they actually got somebody small enough to go in there and see that you were right. And then what would be the purpose of having you there to show them, which they already know, that it's disgusting. In
right.
September of this year, which was just a little bit ago, you had inspected just around 50 fast food restaurants. You don't just limit it to McDonald's, right? You go to Burger King, and you go to basically all of them, right?
Correct. And not just fast food restaurants, casual dining, too, because Chuck E. Cheese and some of these places are indoor, like giant pay-for-play centers that only have a little pizza counter to the side. But because they still have food that they're serving in the area, and it's a play area designed for small children, it still fits my study and what I'm trying to do and change. So yeah, I've looked at 5 national chains as well as several independently owned establishments. So certainly not limited to just McDonald's.
Right. One thing I forgot to mention, Erin, was while you were in there gathering evidence with the swabs and also gathering visual evidence with the damage in these things, and you mentioned, of course, the graffiti and sometimes the X-rated graffiti, and you termed it gang slang. That was pretty good. I had never heard that before. Is that something that you just came up with?
No, it's actually gang tagging and gang slang is something that's sort of, in our field at least, sort of terminology that we use, and gangs in specific neighborhoods have their markers or the way that they tag that their particular gang has been in a place or it's their territory. So that's what I'm talking about when I say gang tagging or gang slang. Some of it is like, I support Crips or I support Bloods, or there's the actual signs. Each individual in the gang has their own sign. So that's the gang tagging that they use. They tag it that they've been there. One of my concerns from my area is desensitization, that kids at very young ages are exposed to these things and they think of them as then normal and they become part of their vernacular. Part of the things that they understand, especially because they're inside playland, they don't think that it's inappropriate.
Right.
And so personally, I'm concerned that a child would go in and say, I support Bloods or I support Crips, and then repeat, I support Bloods or I support Crips, or begin to talk about that stuff with their friends. And it's a way really to sort of network with very small children about things that are certainly things that they should not be having conversations about, nor should they be exposed to at all.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier that this topic touches so many other areas, and this is one of them. Gang slang means that there's actually gang members who are going into these things, and it sounds like they might be young gang members or they might be young wannabe gang members, and that's what you're right. alluding to. And then the kids are being exposed to this language and this culture, and they might think it's cool, and they might then assimilate that into
exactly.
their... And that's something that you would never think about, or I would never think about.
You know, the first time I saw it, I said, what the heck? This needs to be removed. I can't believe it's written in here. But then I travel into the Midwest or into the Northeast or other parts of the Southwest, and you see the same things over and over again. And it's just a different part of the country. So it's a different gang and it's a different symbol, but it's the same stuff. So you can see it really is a pervasive problem. And it goes to this sort of idea that children are really becoming desensitized to things related to violence at much younger and younger ages. They're involved with behaviors that are dangerous.
You started, of course, in your neck of the woods, and mm-hmm. it started out with just one.
Right.
And the reason was, as you said earlier, you asked the manager to do something about it, and you gave the manager enough time to do something about it. You found out that they really don't take that seriously. That's not something they incorporate for whatever right. reason or reasons. And I said, I have a feeling that they are going to be incorporating that, because if you keep going, and it sounds like you are, I don't see what choice they would have other than to institute some sort of system to make sure that these are scrubbed down and completely germ-free.
That's not possible. Oh. They can't make completely germ-free.
Well, at least the dangerous ones.
Right. They can disinfect to get rid of the opportunistic pathogens and keep the microbial load at a level that doesn't pose a risk,
okay.
which is all we're asking. And that's a very reasonable request.
The microbial load should not pose a risk. Gotcha.
Correct.
Tell the listeners about your transition from local scene to mm-hmm. outside of your immediate area. You're in the suburbs of Phoenix. How did you get to the point where you decided, well, I want to go to Tucson?
First of all, when McDonald's responded to that first story in the Arizona Republic, they said it's an isolated incident, that it was just that one location and that the correction had been made, that they took it very seriously. And I said, hogwash. And I started calling other places around Arizona and would just casually ask, what's your protocol for cleaning? And at that time, I didn't even know there was a maintenance problem. I had seen a big crack in their slide and had complained about it, but didn't know that the maintenance issue was this whole separate problematic area. And so when I started calling, the response would either be, why is it dirty? Or what do you care? Or something along those lines. It was never, this is our protocol. This is how often we clean. This is what we use. That wasn't the response. And so I started driving all over and looking inside, and I noticed that they were really bad. And then while we were on a road trip, actually, we were going to Colorado to visit family. And you know, about halfway through that drive, you stop and stretch your legs and the kids need to get out, and it's a long drive. And so we stopped again at one of these establishments, and the kids went to use the restroom, and I said, I'm going to go check out the Playland. And I looked inside.
You couldn't resist.
No way. And it was almost identical to the one from here. And if you've seen that first video, you'll know that that was horrific.
Yeah.
So I went and I got my phone and I went in there and I started taping it. You can hear my daughter calling, hey, mom, what you doing?
Right.
You know, from down. I'm like, don't touch anything, baby. Well, I complained, first of all, to the manager when I was in there. I just said, hey, you know, your playground is pretty gross. Get somebody in there to take care of it. And then the next day, I drove back down the mountain to see if they had cleaned it. And they hadn't. And so I walked over to the veterinary clinic because it was the only place that I could think of that might have swabs. And I asked for the vet to come out and I said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I swabbed a place in Arizona and this one looks so much like that one. I just want to see if they're the same thing.
Right.
He's like, I donate to your cause. Here you go. And so he gave me two more swabs. And so I went in and tested. And that sort of was the impetus for the whole thing starting. So our trip was supposed to be a drive back home through Colorado. Instead, we came back through New Mexico so we could get a third state so I could see if it was the Southwest, if we could get an idea. And these are always selected at random because I'm doing it as a national study. So I look at rural areas, urban areas, high traffic areas, low traffic areas, suburban, high and low socioeconomic statuses. Across the board, I'm trying to get an idea of how bad the problem is in all of the places, not just one or the other. And again, it's just pervasive.
Right. And I saw on your website that even my state was on there, New Jersey. You've been to Arizona, California, Colorado, Illinois, New Mexico, Minnesota, Wisconsin,
Maryland, Florida, Oklahoma, Missouri. Yeah, quite a few. So I have a representation of what I would consider the Eastern United States, the Southwest, and the Midwest. So I'll be getting the Northwest and the South soon.
Wow. And in September of this year, it was just under 50, as I heard in a few of the videos, or just about 50. I think one of your interviews was in September, and it was just under 50, and one was in October, and they said just under 50, but I don't think they gave you enough time to comment. It was probably over 50 at that point, I would imagine. How many is it now?
Well, I do 2 per establishment, and I do 2 establishments per state. So the number doesn't jump exponentially. I would say about now I'm around 65, 70. I just did 4 locations yesterday. Last week, I was in California for a little bit, and I was in the northern part of Arizona. So I added, I don't know, 4, maybe 5, 6, 7, 11 more to that number. So I would say around 70. I don't usually keep count, which is why people say about 50. In my head, I know sort of like a guesstimation,
right,
but it's around 70.
Okay. And of course, you mentioned earlier that the reason that this exists most likely is because there is no regulation on a local level, on a county level, on a state level, or on a federal level.
That's correct.
No regulation at all, which is pretty amazing. But again, I have a feeling there is going to be, because you're not going to give up. What about sponsoring a bill? You mentioned that a few times in some videos. Are you doing that right now?
I wrote a bill. It's called the Kids Play Safe Bill. 2 states right now, Illinois and California, are moving forward with carrying the bill in their respective states. In fact, Jack Frank's people in Illinois should have it up this week. It went through legal this week and should be signed by Jack Frank's and should be up very, very soon. And in California, Assemblymember Michael Allen is sponsoring the bill, and he has 2 potential co-sponsors in Senator Padilla and Assemblymember Marty Block.
Is this for the entire state of Illinois?
Yes. And in Arizona, Maricopa County is changing their verbiage in their health code to include indoor playlands. But without teeth, without some sort of ramifications for non-compliance, I don't believe it will be effective. I'm not saying that what they're doing won't be effective. I hope it will. But there has to be some sort of regulation in place that affords the health inspector the ability to require corrective action be taken. So it's not enough to just say, hey, there's a problem. There has to be an end to that. There has to be a solution. So if there's a problem, they have to be able to say, hey, you have 24 hours to rectify the problem, or action will be taken, either an abatement order or a cease and desist along those lines, stuff that's already in place in the restaurants. So it would just amend what's currently in place in the health code that's already in existence in the rest of the establishment. It just doesn't carry over into the playground area, which to me is, it's just this giant loophole that I'm sure was purposefully put in place.
They messed with the wrong person.
I do a lot of research.
That's great. I think you're doing a great thing.
Thank you.
Not just because I have young kids that want to go into these messes, but brother kids. And I wanted to mention earlier, I forgot to, that when we were talking about the filth in these things, the little plastic balls, the red and blue and yellow balls that the kids can jump in, do most McDonald's have those things? And are they the most filthy?
No, in fact, most places don't have them anymore. In fact, I have been to none that still have ball pits.
Okay.
There was a big problem with them for many, many reasons. Children were getting hurt, suffocated, items were getting lost inside. I believe diapers were coming off. There was lots of germs and bacteria. There were illnesses reported running rampant. So it seems like they took out the ball pits and then left the rest of it. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has specific guidelines related to soft-contained play units, which is what these are. These indoor play centers, the play areas, are called soft-contained play units.
Mm-hmm.
And they have specific guidelines that are related to these. Those guidelines, most of which defer to manufacturers. And the manufacturers then give the people who purchase their product owner's manuals that say, here is what you're supposed to do. Here's how often you're supposed to do it. And this is what you need to be doing if you want to maintain a clean and safe place. If you don't do these things, then children are in danger. Reads very specifically. And the problem lies in the fact that very few of these places actually adhere to the manufacturer's guidelines, to what's outlined by the Consumer Product Safety Commission and suggested by the FDA and the CDC. So there's already things that are in place that sort of govern this as an umbrella sort of thing. It just hasn't been connected the way that it's supposed to be. And hopefully this study and my continuous talking to people will do that, will make that connection and then result in corrective change.
right? Because these are just guidelines issued by these organizations.
I think the federal government has every authority here to step in. And I went to D.C. I met with people on the HELP committee, and I urged them to take this up and carry this at the national level, because I believe it's a national problem and not a state problem. They encouraged me to go to each individual state, and I am doing that, and I will continue to do that. If I have to hoof it to every single one of them, I will. I've got 3 down, 47 to go.
Even Alaska and Hawaii?
I get emails from them. That just shows you it really is a national problem and would very easily fall under the jurisdiction of either the CDC or the EPA or the FDA. There's so many places that this could be housed. And with the kind of public support that we have, it would be a pretty easy carry.
Now, you have a full-time job, as we talked about earlier. Yeah. How many hours a week do you spend on that job?
Teaching?
Yes.
At least 40.
That leaves 128. Do you sleep a lot?
No.
Yeah, there's 168 hours in a week. You work 40, that leaves 128. So let's say you sleep about 6 hours a night times 7.
No.
Not even?
No, about 4.
Wow.
Ooh. 4.5.
Just to not give you the benefit of the doubt, let's say 5. So 5 times 7 is 35. That's 128 minus 35. That's 93. So there's still 93 hours left. You got to spend some time with the kids. How much time are you spending on this? And of course, it's been called by the media a crusade. And I think that's a compliment to say that, because more people should be going on crusades. But after speaking with you all this time, I see that it is a crusade and it's a great crusade. So how much time do you spend on this great crusade?
Well, I spend time every day. I work, so I teach. And then as soon as I'm done teaching, well, most of my time is spent during the day with my kids. If they're napping, then I'm either teaching, or when they go to bed, I teach. And then I stay up and do kids play safe stuff until I fall asleep. I usually go to bed at like 1:30 at night and I wake up at 5:30 in the morning. And some days, like yesterday, I was traveling all day long. I just take my computer with me. I work in the airport. I teach. Thank goodness I can teach mobily. And so I teach when I'm traveling. I'm answering emails and I'm interacting with my students. Anytime that I'm not with my children, my husband, or teaching, I am doing Kids Play Safe. I spend very little time with my friends and my family. This is really important to me. And if my husband's in town and I can travel and go to another state and do more testing, I do.
You had mentioned just a moment ago about doing work in the airport. Explain to the listeners what you mean by that, because they're thinking, well, wait a second, she's a teacher. What is she doing in an airport?
I teach both on a ground campus. So I teach in a traditional format where I stand in front of the class and I profess. And I also teach online. And at present, my students are all online students. I don't go back into a traditional classroom for another few months. So as long as I have my computer, I can work. So I was grading papers and answering student emails and interacting with my students all day yesterday. Fortunately, the planes that I was on were all Wi-Fi planes. So I was actually online the whole time I was flying, too.
Wow, that's cool. Has it affected your job at all, your teaching job?
I don't know if it's affected my job with ASU. It has not impacted my other jobs at all. So that's good. Because I'm not teaching with the ASU this semester, I don't know. I can say that it doesn't do a career a lot of good, especially if you're in the business of education, to have bad things said about you. And specifically, if you're doing research for somebody to purport that you're disruptive, it challenges your credibility. And I can say that I am incredibly ethical. And so things being said like that about me bother me, especially because they're inaccurate. So it's still, we'll see whether it impacts my career in any way. I'm certainly hoping that it doesn't.
ASU, you're talking about Arizona State University in Tempe.
Correct. I happen to love ASU. I got my bachelor's, my master's, and my PhD from there. I've taught there since 2005 in some capacity or another, and I love teaching there. So I'm certainly hopeful that the comments that were put forth by McDonald's don't negatively impact me in any way, because it would be a real big disservice to my students. I'm a good teacher. I believe I'm an asset to the places for which I teach, though.
Right, but ASU is a huge school and they have a lot of corporate connections, and that's of course why you're alluding to that. Has it affected your relations with your friends? Besides the fact that you mentioned before that you really don't get to hang out with your friends anymore, beyond that, has it affected your friends and has it affected your family?
I have an amazing family, almost all of whom are in academia or have been in academia. So they understand the idea of doing research and gathering data. So the idea of the study is familiar to them. So my parents and my family have been incredibly supportive. And I'm still a parent volunteer. I'm still co-coach for my son's soccer team, for his soccer team. I'm still an ever-present mom. I haven't missed a single activity, and I tuck them in every single night. If I fly away, I come back that night. So it really hasn't impacted my kids too much, although I can say they're learning something very valuable in caring about other people. So super supportive. My friends are the same way. I have a very small group of friends, and they're friends that I've had for years, and they're people that I trust and care about very much. They're good friends, so they're doing as good friends do, and that's providing support and kindness and that. So
right.
We're just trying to keep kids safe, and most of my friends either have children themselves or have nieces or nephews or grandchildren in some cases. So it hits home for everybody. So it's something everybody that I know can relate to, and something that sort of sparks interest and anger in many cases from a lot of people when they find out what's going on and how long it's been going on for that matter.
Right. And I did hear in a video, I think it was, or I read it, that you had contracted something yourself called shingles. And I've heard that term many times over the years. I don't know exactly what it is, or I did know, but I forgot. Did that happen to you? And what is shingles exactly?
In my case, they're just little blisters. I got them on my chest, kind of right at my collarbone. And they were just little blister sore kind of things. And for me now, they come and go. I also got neuropathy. In my case, it presented as burning in the lower extremities from about my knees to my ankles, just on the back side of my legs. And it was bilateral, so it was in both legs. And it persisted for a few months. It has since subsided, so I don't have it anymore, thank goodness. But the shingles sort of comes and goes. And they're just like little things you want to itch and scratch. And they're like just little open blisters. But some people get them on their face and their eyes. I've been very lucky right now that they've only presented on my chest.
Do you think you caught it from one of your
excursions? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And the neuropathy, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the neuropathy is likely from exposure to pesticides. And there's an enormous amount of chemicals that I'm coming into contact with. Some of these I'm climbing in like 3 or 4 or 5 a day. And it's a pretty residual basis that I'm going into them. And assuming they're all using the industry standard chemical, which is a chemical that really isn't effective at cleaning much, but it's a chemical nonetheless. So I'm being exposed to chemicals pretty frequently. And I also have bouts with stomach problems, and I get little random infections and stuff. But my doctor said that I should expect that for a couple of years. And it just goes to show even more the impact that it can have on children. In fact, my parents were commenting to me the other day when all of this stuff was really going on, because I had the neuropathy and the shingles at the same time. And they said, "Are you wearing a mask? Are you wearing gloves when you go in?" And I said, "I'm next to a 2-year-old who's barefoot and eating at the same time. And people are suggesting I wear hazmat suits." And that visual image, it really needs to change. If they think it's dangerous for me, imagine what it is to a small child whose immune system is just developing. I think the thing that I try to convey to people is, yes, there's other places around the environment that people are exposed to similar things. The fact is that these places are places specifically designed for small children, children ages 2 to 12. They're also specifically designed for people to be eating there. And they're places that are designed for children's, the behavioral patterns, to be crawling on hands and knees. And think about your son. If you think about children his age and my children's age, these are not gentle, docile little creatures. These are rambunctious people that run and jump and climb and throw and slide and
lick.
Do. Exactly. And they do all these things that are likely to result in scrapes and scratches and bruises, and they don't behave the way that adults behave. So it means that they're more likely to have things that become systemic because one of these bacteria can get into their scratch, or they pick their scabs often. So they have open wounds. Many of them are thumb suckers. So they're crawling around and then their thumb goes right into their mouth, or their fingernail biters or eye rubbers. So all of the behaviors that are typical of this age group of the population, so the small 2 to 12 window, that in concert with the fact that they're designed for them to be eating in and they're not being cleaned or maintained, and the types of pathogens that we're finding, that's why this is such a huge problem and why it's not comparable to some of the other places that people say, you know, my credit card is really dirty or my computer screen is very dirty. Yes, but you're not eating off of it. You're not making money off of children coming in to play on it. You're not specifically saying to your child, here, this is yours to come play with. It's a very different thing. And it happens to be a very unique environment because I can't think of any others that are similar, which is why the only comparables that we've looked at are places that have protocols and places that do not, because it really isn't another comparable environment. The only other one would be like a daycare or a children's school, an elementary school. And both of those have regulation, and both of them, at least one of the things on the school list you get every year are disinfecting wipes. And you see children every day cleaning their desks. They do sanitizer before they eat at lunch. They do the same thing before they do their snack. They have cleaning crews that come in every night and they take care of it.
I was thinking about how to clean these places, and I was thinking maybe some kind of like a high-powered wash.
That would be bad.
That would be bad?
That would be bad. Here's the reason.
Okay.
Okay, so imagine, if you will, a bucket, like a construction bucket, like the kind that you would see at Home Depot, the big orange one.
Right.
Okay. Now, the pathogens that we've been talking about, imagine those are ping pong balls. Now, dump a whole bunch of ping pong balls inside the bucket. Okay, now you turn on a power washer and you're power washing the bejesus out of the ping pong balls, and they're ricocheting all over the, and by the way, the bucket is the tube that the kids play in.
Okay.
So you're spraying these things down, right? And they're bouncing all over, and then you turn off the water and what's left?
Well, they're still there, but they're in different places.
And they've now ricocheted off of all of the other parts of the inside of the structure, because water doesn't kill pathogens. And power washing, what it does, would move all of this stuff around the rest of the structure. And then as it dries, it sort of settles on the bottom. And then because these have connecting tubes and there's holes in beneath the connecting portions, the water would then seep to the floor. And then you would have a lot of stuff that settles on the floor.
Right.
So what was once potentially centrally located would then be everywhere, and it would pose an even more significant problem. And it actually makes it look like it's clean when it's not, which is a big problem as a parent, because we think if we see something and it looks clean, then that means it must be clean and safe. And I had this conversation with Dr. Furr, who's my micro consult, the other day, because I went into one of these places and I said, I have to remind myself that when I go into one and it looks clean and I get excited, that I should be cautiously optimistic. That one actually came back with two swabs, and they had more than 6 million pathogens on just two swabs. So it's really a sort of counterintuitive thing. Just because it might not look dirty, that it isn't. The best way to clean these is to sanitize nightly. Just go in, there's sanitizing solution, there's sanitizing wipes. It's super easy to do. That reduces the microbial load. But then you have to actually get rid of the pathogens. And sanitizing does not get rid of pathogens. You have to disinfect. And the best way to disinfect, because we're talking about children, we don't want chemicals all over the place, is just good old-fashioned steam.
Okay, so what if you went in there with a steam cleaner instead of a power washer? Would that do
perfect.
It?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so maybe they could design these units with built-in, almost like sprinkler-type systems, steam cleaning systems, where after the place closes, they shoot the steam out and that's it, it's done. Is that something that could be done?
There has to be something. I know the people who clean them, there are companies that specialize in cleaning indoor play equipment. And there are, like I said, there are companies, establishments that are doing this correctly and have people that come in and make sure that they're clean and safe and take care of maintenance and all of that. And those people are disinfecting. The company that they use does disinfect. And they do use steam to do it. I think it's a machine that they have that's specifically small enough and malleable enough that they can get in. Remember, these are very contorted, gerbil sort of like structures, so it's difficult. But I'm all for any type of innovation that would enable more places to do this on a regular basis, which is sort of what the bill calls for, is the disinfecting bi-monthly or monthly, depending on traffic. And it calls for the use of steam in any way that they can do it. So the choice of the methodology is theirs as long as it's disinfected.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering about that. And I was thinking, well, maybe power washing and designing these things to be on an angle so when the water did drop to the floor, it would go down some kind of a drain. But I see what you're saying about steam. That makes a lot more sense. And it can be done, as you said. And these bills, do you have them on the website? Do you have the language of the bills? No. Okay.
But I can. Basically, it's very simple vernacular. All it does really is include, so the current health code lists all the places that pose a health risk and for the reasons, and it just adds to that indoor play areas, such as those containing tubes, tunnel slides, inflatables, rides, those types of things. It reads specifically those areas containing tubes, tunnel slides, etc., not being properly sanitized, and then tubes, tunnel slides, etc., not being properly disinfected, and tubes, tunnel slides, etc., not being properly maintained, and then each of those things disease is outlined specifically for what the definition would be of maintenance, sanitization, disinfecting. And then it goes on to discuss abatement, cease and desist, what is considered source of filth or nuisance. It's like 3 pages long, and most of it is definitions.
It's really impressive that you have already gotten 2 states to do something about this. Let the listeners know about which website they can go to in order to follow your progress. I know you said that you were on Facebook and also your website, kidsplaysafe.net.
KidsPlaySafe.net and then Kids Play Safe on Facebook. It's a cause page. I update on that almost daily, and I include whatever numbers I get back from the lab. I include the bacteria that I get back. I write about anytime I have a meeting with a legislator, or for instance, I've met with the president of the Arizona Restaurant Association. I spoke about that. I've reached out to the president of the California Restaurant Association, the Arizona Hospital Association, the Association of Pediatrics. So those types of meetings that I'm having, I talk about that. Parents share their stories and tell me about whatever experience that they've had. There's no better way to learn than from the experience of others. So I love when people share what's ongoing with them, and it helps to spur me on to know that I'm making some headway and helping kids. I'm on Twitter at Dr. ECJ and... Oh, the YouTube videos. I update the YouTube videos. It's Dr. E.C. Jordan on YouTube. And I have, right now, I think 50 videos online of different playlands.
And it's mostly, of course, you going through these things and filming. That's what I wanted to ask you about. And I forgot to ask you this, but those first McDonald's, we talked about that. But now in these other places you go into, and it's not just McDonald's again, it's Burger King, anybody. These other establishments that you go into. Now, you said earlier that you're small. I guess some kids might be taller than you. And
yeah, I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I mean, kids that go into that, but there aren't kids that go into those things that are taller. You're the biggest person in there, right?
No, in fact, that's one of the problems, the lack of supervision in them. In fact, I was in one the other day and a girl came up to me and said, I promise you're going to find disgusting stuff in this one because I know the high school kids come in here every day after school and hang out in there.
She knew you already.
That person did, yeah. In Arizona, there's been a lot of coverage, and I was at one that was here locally. And she said, because she started describing it to me, like they would go and just sit inside there and they would lay down in the tubes and it was covered in high school students inside. You know, I found everything from pubic hairs, stuff obviously that didn't come from a child. And these places don't have adult supervision. This is not the fault of the parents. The parents do have some responsibility, obviously, to make sure their kids are safe. But the presumption is, and always has been, that they're being cleaned and that they're being maintained. So parents just don't think. You think if you take your kids to one of these places and you let them go in and play, that they're fine, that you're right here and they're right there. And that means that they're safe. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. I always think about the early readers, and I have a child who's an early reader, just starting to learn the letters and put groupings together. And I think about that one that we went in, and imagine a child who's an early reader coming out, spelling out or sounding out some of the words that they've just seen, F-U-C-K and what is B-I-T-C-H and some of this other stuff. And then asking their parents, what do these things mean? And you certainly aren't prepared to have that conversation with your 4 or 5 or 6 year old when they've just come out of some place that was supposed to be a safe and fun place for them to play. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many, many reasons why I think this is such a big deal.
Yeah, and you would think that just that in and of itself would be enough to spur these owners to say, geez, I don't want that in there. That's ridiculous. There's kids going in there. But obviously that isn't enough to do it. What's the worst thing you ever found in one of these areas?
Just yesterday, I was in one and there was human feces. I think that's the 4th or 5th time that I've come across that, and vomit, the smell of urine all the time. There's Band-Aids quite often with bodily fluid on them. And people, they think Band-Aid and they're like, oh yeah, my kid was wearing a Band-Aid. But you forget that then there's open wounds and kids carry things in our body. So to have bodily fluid that can be transmitted, it's a big deal. My stomach turns every single time I see the graffiti. The graffiti really bothers me. But I think the most dangerous, in addition to the pathogens and that type of exposure, is the increasingly high rate that I'm finding broken equipment. Just yesterday, I saw one. I was on a second story and it was a side window and it was missing a screw. So I was able to put my arm through it and look down with my camera because it was a second story. Plexiglass that's just failing and is riddled with cracks in it. So imagine one of these kids with a good swift kick and the window is going to go straight through. Second story platforms that are unsecured and webbing. I find all the time webbing that's been slashed or is failing that poses a major, major risk. A fall fall risk and entrapment risk and entanglement risk. Remember, these people's body parts are much smaller than ours. So if they're crawling across, the whole leg could go through there, or their head could get trapped if they're a toddler. It's designed for children as young as age 2. It all, to me, is very disheartening. And it's the reason why I keep doing it. They keep saying they're going to look into it, and they keep doing nothing, and I keep finding the same thing, and I'm about fed up with that.
I don't blame you. When you go into these establishments, you go in alone or with your kids to do the testing?
No, just me.
Does anybody ever come up to you to say, excuse me, what are you doing? You haven't gotten to that point where everybody knows you yet.
A lot of people know me. It's far more frequent now than it was before.
Even in other states?
In other states, no. I don't think anybody's come up to me in another state. And actually, most parents say, are you testing for germs? Because I have swabs in my hand and I have a camera and I'm a nice person. I'm not a threatening individual in any way. And I'm always very amenable to answering anybody's questions. I never tell them that they shouldn't be in here or the place is bad. That's not what I'm there to do. I don't want them to shut them down. What I want is for them to clean and make them safe. Every parent that I've come across has been very supportive. And if they ask a question, they always like the answer and are very appreciative for the information. And as a parent, if somebody was in there doing something and they found out that there was something in there that could hurt my child and they didn't tell me, I would wonder what the heck kind of parent they were.
Absolutely. What's the average time you spend there doing this?
Less than 10 minutes.
Do you ever buy
it
at McDonald's or Burger King?
Every single time. I actually buy the exact same thing every single time. I use the same card to do it, so I create a digital record of my being there. And I never want to be accused of not being a patron. That was a double negative. I don't ever want to be accused of just using them for something. So I'm always a patron. Doesn't matter where I go, I always buy some.
Well, that's great. You're doing an amazing thing. You're an amazing person. And it's always a pleasure to meet people like you, because I always say that there should be many, many, many more people like you and willing to do what you're doing really selflessly, because you're not making any money off of this. It's costing you money and
yeah,
and time, and you're getting a lot.
It's costing me a lot of money.
A lot of money, right. I'm sure it is. Going all over the place, traveling to these different states and spending the time getting there and having to eat and having to buy that one thing that you buy all the time.
It's the lab tests that are the expensive component. My partner is just a consult. I'm using a microbiologic analytical lab. In fact, I use two labs for reliability. So every time I take swabs, I send them directly to the lab for analysis. So my partner isn't doing that at home or anything. That's actually being done in a highly accredited lab with excellent credentials by people who are very good at what they do. And it's being commented on by some of the most respected microbiologists in the industry.
Right.
And supported by everybody, not everybody, but quite a few people in the medical field, from family practitioners to obstetricians and pediatricians. We're creating quite a group of people who care deeply, who are educated and are coming at this from a knowledgeable standpoint and just seeking the help of everyone around the country, because everybody can help.
Now, Erin, I'm looking at the website kidsplaysafe.net, and I see the tabs home, about, our mission, results, how you can help, videos, news, links, donate, contact. How you can help? Why don't you tell the listeners how they can help?
Well, there's a couple of ways that people can help, and we are appreciative of any of them. First and foremost, there's a tab to reach out to your legislators. So you can click on that. It'll take you directly to your state page, and it'll tell you who your representatives are and how to get in contact with them. So when we're trying to get regulations in place and trying to urge those people in positions of power to help us, it would be great if they knew that the public was on our side. So first and foremost, that's what we'd like them to do.
And it also has a section here, share your story about an illness or infection.
Yeah, like I said in the past, and I'll continue to say, there's no better way for people to learn than from the experience of others. So when people tell me about their experience, what has happened to their child, whether that child contracted an illness or an infection or some other type of experience happens, if they're willing to share that, I share it with other people. Parents can send me pictures of their local establishments. I get pictures of McDonald's all the time, and I post them on the Kids Play Safe page. And if there's stories that people are willing to share, I post those as well. And again, those just go to helping keep kids safe. So if you've had something that's happened to you and it can potentially help somebody else, it would be great if they'd be willing to share it.
Right. And also there's a place there to sign a petition, help ensure children have clean and safe places to play. And right now there's, looks like, 1,643 signatures on there. What's that about, that petition?
It's the petition that is just trying to demonstrate to legislators that people do care, that it's a cause that's important to other people. It's something that is worthy of their attention, and they should help carry the bill. And we have signatures from people all over the world on the petition. So it's hopefully going to help make a difference. Just one more way to demonstrate that this is a national public health issue.
Right.
Another way that they can help, and one that I personally am incredibly appreciative of, is when people donate to the cause. It costs me, and again, this is coming out of my own pocket, it costs me about $75 per swab, and I do 2 swabs per establishment on average, unless it's a very large place, in which case I do more. But typically, it costs me about $150 per place that I go. And to give you an idea, I went to 4 places the other day. So when I dropped off those swabs, I knew that I was giving them $600 of my money. And I do that on a fairly regular basis. So I'm very appreciative of anybody who's willing to help in any possible way, even $1, $5, any of that. Every single penny helps, and it goes directly towards lab tests, and so that I can keep this going, because sustaining it on my own is quite difficult. I am an adjunct professor, and I piecemeal a bunch of part-time teaching jobs together to make a full-time job. So I'm by no way independently wealthy, and I'm working as many extra jobs and teaching as many extra classes as I possibly can. So anything people are willing to give, I would greatly appreciate.
Right. And how much have you spent so far, you figure, on this?
Just shy of $10,000, and that includes lab testing, travel to other states, having to do car rentals, and all the other travel expenses. I try very hard to go out and come back in the same day so that I'm not paying for lodging. But if I go, say, to the East Coast, I'll try to hit 3 states at one time, and I'll stay overnight one night and then try to get back so I can get all of them in. So just shy of $10,000. It's a lot of money, but it's incredibly important, and it's just money, and it's more important that children are protected. So
I see on the donate tab here that folks can donate with MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover, and I guess a bank check. Any other ways that they could do it? Can they mail a check into you, or is it only done through that donate tab?
Yeah, it's only done through PayPal. I want to make sure that there's always a record of what people give for both them and myself. I don't want people just willy-nilly sending me money. It makes me nervous.
Sure.
And I want for them to always know that it goes directly to, it's a business account. That business account, that card is only used for expenses for Kids Play Safe. It's not a personal card. And I'm one of those people that likes to keep records. So I want to make sure that I can always demonstrate in some way that the money went directly to the cause.
Right. How long have you been collecting donations?
Just a few months. When we started the website is when we started taking donations. And to date, we've raised just under $500. I can say that 200 of that, although, came from my mother.
That's great, though.
Well, yeah, if your family doesn't support you, then who will?
So, that's right.
And again, I am so grateful for all those people who have donated so far and those people who are willing to donate in the future. It really means a lot to me, and I'm positive that it means a lot to the children all over the country.
Dr. Erin Carr Jordan of Kids Play Safe, mother extraordinaire, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners, and wish you the best of luck, and looking forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your taking the time to have me on, and I can tell that you care about kids, and that means a lot to me, and hopefully this reaches a lot more people across the country who do as well.
Thanks, Erin. I think it will.
Thank you.